just feel so empowered and strong to be here.
Fasten your seatbelts. The week's most impactful, confusing, and downright head-scratching local news stories, hand-delivered to you in less time than it takes to deliver a pizza. Your week reviewed next.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Welcome, I'm Nick Haynes. Glad to have you with us again as we dissect the week's top local news stories. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week from KCUR News, Lisa Rodriguez. From the world of television news, reporter Charlie Keegan from KSHB TV is with us. And from the primetime anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Ketz. And tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR News, Brian Ellison. Now, since we last sat around our Week in Review table, thousands of Kansas Cityans decided to get a little more exercise by taking to the streets in what some reports claim was the biggest protest action of President Trump's second term.
I think our voices matter, and sometimes it feels like all we can do is vote and mark a piece of paper every 4 years. But it's when you see the amount of people that come out that support the same kind of thing that you do, it's really empowering.
This is not about one race. It's not about just the immigrants. It is about us as a nation.
Now, just ahead of the protest, Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe didn't skip a beat. He declared a state of emergency and activated the National Guard. But were any Guard troops ever deployed in Kansas City, St. Louis, or any of the other 30 cities in Missouri that were protesting over the weekend, Chris?
Negative. the thing that I was struck by, a couple of things, the size of these crowds in Kansas City and everywhere. And there were certainly security concerns. Listen, police in Overland Park were talking with their colleagues in neighboring cities, hearing some chatter about maybe a Proud Boys visit to one of the gatherings on 135th. So I think the concern about security was certainly real, but thankfully it was a fairly quiet.
A lot of people don't know, my youngest son is in the Missouri National Guard, so we were texting on Friday. Had he heard anything? Did he get any orders? They said that no phone calls, not even a mention of it. But I'm wondering, because of Mike Kehoe's order there, though, did it have an impact on the amount of people who came out? Is there any evidence that it might have brought down the numbers of people or actually juiced those numbers?
It doesn't appear that the announcement had any effect that we can really tell or be sure of on turnout at the protests. It was a very large turnout, a peaceful protest. And what I will say, what I've noted about this protest, is that I feel like protests in general have become a little bit more professional, a little bit more organized since 2020, because people are in the practice of doing it. They know how to act. They know how to interact with law enforcement, and they're probably in communication with law enforcement. And I say that probably on law enforcement's end as well, despite escalating rhetoric about cracking down on civil unrest and on protesters. I believe KCPD is also a little more professional when it comes to dealing with protesters and not escalating to the point of violence.
Charlie.
I think, yeah, we all learned something from 2020 about how to handle these protests, how to not escalate them with the presence of a large police force or National Guard. And from what I heard from people who were at the No Kings protest, that it was quite civil, and people would maybe bump into somebody and then apologize immediately, and everybody was getting along.
Now, the Kansas City Star reported on how peculiar it was that Kehoe, the governor, would declare a state of emergency and then take a flight to Paris. He's in France this week on a trade mission. The emergency order is actually in place until the end of the month. So does that mean, Brian, that Lieutenant Governor, who most Missourians couldn't even name, is running the show and could technically deploy the National Guard anywhere, anytime until July 1?
Well, that maybe is a little unclear. Ordinarily, when the governor leaves the state, the lieutenant governor does serve as acting governor and has all of the powers and responsibilities of governor. When Mike Kehoe was himself the lieutenant governor, he signed executive orders, he extended orders, he even appointed people to state commissions and boards. But it appears that in this case, according to the Star's reporting, there was a document signed before Kehoe left the country that said that Lieutenant Governor Dave Wassinger would not be able to exercise all of those powers and, in fact, would not be able to authorize the National Guard into action. I'm not quite sure of the legal status of a document like that because the state constitution does provide for the Lieutenant Governor to serve as acting governor, but apparently there were never any plans for Wassinger to have that kind of authority. As it has turned out, at least so far, the National Guard has not been activated or has not been brought into action.
Somebody who wasn't at the parade was Mayor Quinton Lucas, or I should say the parade, rather, the protest, because he was in Europe on his own trade mission. Somebody who was there was Kansas City Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver, who says his name has now appeared on the 70-person hit list found in the car of the suspect in the Minnesota politician shooting over the weekend that killed a Democratic state lawmaker and badly injured a Minnesota senator. Was he the only area politician, Charlie, on the list discovered by law enforcement?
As far as we know, at least publicly, yes. Emmanuel Cleaver seems to be the only local representative from the Kansas City area on that list. At 41, we reached out to Sharice Davids. On the Kansas side, we reached out to Governor Laura Kelly. Some of the Democrats seem to be targets, you know. But as far as we know, they're not on the list.
But why him, though, what, versus a Laura Kelly or a Sharice Davids, which arguably would have very similar positions?
Sure. I asked Emmanuel Cleaver, Congressman Cleaver, that same question, and he said he doesn't know, but that's something that he's interested in finding out, why his name's on that list.
Has it changed his perspective now? Is he not doing any events as a result of this, Chris?
The events continue, but there is added security around the congressman, at least for now. He is planning a meeting with FBI agents when he returns to D.C. next week, and I'm quoting reporting from Fox 4's Jonathan Katz, and so, yes, I'm...
Your own son,
I'm relying
yes.
on my son's reporting here at a moment like this. But he's clearly concerned, and he should be, and this is just one more chapter in what is a troubling trend, and it's lawmakers and it's judges. It should be noted that Missouri's 4th District Congressman Mark Alford is asking that more money should be spent on security for lawmakers and for judges.
Emmanuel Cleaver is now 80 years old. Lisa, is there any hint that he's going to say, look, I've been doing this too long, I don't need this type of potential harm for me and my family, I'm not going to run it again?
I think potentially. I don't know of public comments he's made about that. He's always been pretty tight-lipped, not giving too many hints that he's nearing the end of his career. But what you point out is true. He is 80 years old. This is an increasing rhetoric, particularly against Democratic lawmakers. But he also is at a point where he's had more power than he has had before in Congress, at least within his own caucus.
I mean, look, this has an impact on legislators and public officials, even if they weren't on the list of this particular assailant. State Senator Dinah Sykes in Kansas, the Senate Minority Leader, spoke this week on KCUR very very emotionally, very honestly about the impact it has on her and on her family. She actually knew the former House Speaker in Minnesota who was killed. It is chilling. It is isolating, and it puts legislators in a position, not just 80-year-old congressmen, but younger ones who are in the middle of their careers, to say, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if it's worth it. And that is not good for our society and our system.
What's the biggest event in town this week? Well, the biggest crowds are expected this Sunday at the Asperia campus in Overland Park, the former Sprint headquarters site, which is playing host to the city's official World Cup kickoff party. They're not going to be throwing free World Cup game tickets at you, but organizers are promising a sort of a mini soccer-themed NFL draft-style experience with food, drink, live entertainment, appearances from Kansas City's top soccer stars, human foosball, photo ops, and lots of speechifying from our top elected leaders, including Mayor Quinton Lucas. Can we read anything, Charlie, into why they're doing this event in Johnson County? It's usually always on the sort of Missouri side, isn't it?
Right. We know FanFest is going to be down near the World War I Memorial. That seems like the obvious place to do it. So, right, what is happening in Johnson County that's getting their attention?
Could this be a trial run to say, hey, we can have thousands of people come here and they can park pretty easily and navigate all this traffic? What a perfect site for where the Royals might move. Chris,
some
come
would
on.
Say. I don't know that it's a trial run in terms of handling crowds or anything like that. I do think that this is an attempt by the committee to sort of fly the flag that the World Cup 26 effort in Kansas City is a more regional effort rather than just Kansas City, Missouri specific. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that as the year progresses.
Now, by the way, if you have to use one face, one person to advertise Kansas City to the world in advance of the World Cup, who would you pick? The Kansas City World Cup Committee has made its choice, and their first promo ad that will be seen around the planet is of Andy Reid.
I'm Andy Reid, head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, and this is Kansas City. Having FIFA World Cup here in Kansas City would be unbelievable. There's a certain feeling of accomplishment when you win it all. And there's so much hard work that goes into it from a player's standpoint and a coach's standpoint. And then you add in the fans on top of that. I saw when Messi came to town and in one of his regular season games with Miami and then our Kansas City team here, the stadium was packed. And it's going to draw even more with FIFA being here. When you're talking about the world watching, and I think that's very, very exciting. This is my city, my home. This is Kansas City.
So what does it say that Andy Reid is now the face of Kansas City around the world? And in a sense, does it say the Chiefs are our greatest worldwide export, Brian?
I think that is not surprising to me at all. I think anywhere you travel in the world, people know the Chiefs, they know Patrick Mahomes, and they probably know Andy Reid. I think it's interesting that what is celebrated there is the presence of soccer. He doesn't really mention the Kansas City soccer powerhouses, Sporting or Current. He mentions Lionel Messi coming to town with Miami. But even so, I think Andy Reid's a recognizable figure. That it makes sense they're pushing that out to the world.
They could have done Taylor Swift though, couldn't they?
Perhaps. I don't know if they could get her. I'm a little surprised it was Andy Reid over Patrick Mahomes. But still, what Brian says is true. The Chiefs are our most winning, most successful brand in Kansas City and most recognizable.
Yeah, and it is one of the few, along with the weather, common languages of Kansas City, isn't it?
Well, it also speaks to, I think, to the worldwide appeal of the NFL and in particular the Chiefs. And Andy Reid, you know, before he came to Kansas City, he was a well-known guy, but now his brand has taken a different level thanks to Super Bowl victories and, the years in Kansas City.
Now, when you're the smallest American city to host the World Cup and you already don't have enough hotel rooms to accommodate everyone, the last thing you want to do is tick off Airbnb owners who are going to be essential to housing the estimated 650,000 people arriving here for the global soccer tournament. Tell that to Jackson County, which this week decided to reclassify Airbnbs as commercial properties, socking them with eye-popping bills they say could force them to sell up.
Is taxation without representation. We were never given notice.
Her annual taxes more than tripled to $6,872 per year. That's on top of the short-term rental taxes and registration she already pays to Kansas City.
Who is going to want to rent out their house for the World Cup when it's going to cause their property taxes to triple? I think it's something that people in Kansas City should be concerned about.
I see as we end our week, Jackson County is now having a change of heart, Charlie. They've listened.
They have, yes. The county had, you know, reclassified all these homes that are Airbnbs as commercial properties, which means they pay more in taxes than a residential property. But the Airbnb owners cried foul and got the attention of some legislators, and they passed an ordinance this week to reclassify the Airbnbs as residential properties, which means their taxes go down, which means they can stay in operation.
Who says Jackson County lawmakers don't listen then, Brian?
Well, right. I mean, there has been a long-standing tension now between Jackson County's legislature and between the executive department officials, including the assessor, who have been embroiled now for several years in conversation over the size of tax assessment. So it's not so surprising that the legislature pushed back after the Director of Assessment acted.
But while Jackson County is now willing to protect Airbnbs, at least through the World Cup, all bets are off after that. But what about other businesses, one could argue, that are also essential to a successful tournament? The Blip Coffee Shop says their property assessments went up 600%. A music venue in Kansas City gets hit with a 1,100% property tax reassessment, which they described as a death sentence. Now, I thought Jackson County had decided to abide by state orders to not raise assessments by more than 15%. So what happened? Or was it only homes, not businesses, who were part of that?
Well, the cap was limited to residential properties, and these are both commercial businesses. Still, there is some question. Well, if we can't raise residential properties beyond this cap, are we handing the bill then to commercial property owners? I think that will be debated. I think that's probably the next fight to happen between the legislature and the assessor and the executive. But certainly, these businesses will appeal these assessments, and so there is still time for those to right size a little bit. But certainly, going from being appraised at $56,000 to $700,000, I don't know that can stand as a final amount.
I think the 30,000-foot view here is this entire experience puts one more log on the fire in the effort to turn the office of the Jackson County Assessor from something that is appointed by the county executive to a vote of the people.
But, Charlie, I've seen that one lawmaker at least is trying to now work with these businesses and say, let's cap them for 15% for businesses, which it makes me feel like, well, where does the money come from? If you're capping it for 15% for residents, capping it 15% for businesses, where do you actually have the money to provide services from parks and recreation to the prosecutor's office, aging services?
I mean, school districts are the ones that get most of their money from property taxes. Yeah, but this week, Manny Abarca, a legislator, introduced an ordinance to to put the cap on increases for commercial properties at 15%. That'll get more discussion next week. I've heard some debate already that it may not be legal or possible, but at least there are some legislators trying to look out for commercial
properties. I was hoping we could have some good news out of Jackson County this week to report, but clearly there's still some turmoil and lots of potential protests heading our way coming up next week at the Jackson County Legislature. By the way, Jackson County isn't the only place upsetting residents this week. So is the leafy green suburb of Prairie Village, which, after weeks of tensions, greenlights a new $30 million city hall without a public vote. Now, a vocal group of residents are blasting the council for bypassing voters on such a massive project.
Let the residents vote. You have the power. Make it happen. What are you afraid of? Losing?
All righty, on the Missouri side, we're accustomed to big projects having to get voter approval before moving forward. At a time when we are demanding transparency from government, why was the Prairie Village Council so adamant about bypassing voters on this one, Lisa?
I am not sure, and I think it may have to do with the specific group of Prairie Village residents who are objecting to this, that for many years, Prairie Village could kind of go on with its business without much fanfare. And after the rezoning changes and a push for affordable housing that we've seen over in the last year, this group of residents of Prairie Village coalesced to really fight back against any of those changes. And I think this response to this project may be a direct reaction of this particularly vocal group, because in other bigger cities, and certainly on the Missouri side, as you mentioned, we're used to bond asks of this size to come before the voters.
And you missed out there, 9 recall efforts against the mayor of Prairie Village on top of that. Charlie, you know, what are the lessons here? Why are they so adamant? Why does not let the public vote on it?
Well, I think that there's some trust issues between the public and the people that they elect to make the decisions for them. They don't feel like those people are maybe most qualified or making the decisions that the electorate want them to make. But the city council says this is, government 101. You elect us to make these decisions. In Kansas, the law says a first-class city can opt out of going to voters for bond projects of this size. And we've made that, we've adopted that position, and so we're doing work.
I talked to a couple of people who live in Prairie Village. They've lived there a long time. They're observers of City Hall. And the issue of City Hall and the police department needing more space is actually an issue that they kind of were able to wrap their arms around, was actually something that they felt like, at least on the surface, they could support, which is the ironic part about all of this, not going to a public vote. But the mere fact, I think, that we're even having this discussion, yes, the Prairie Village City Council may be able to push this across the finish line, and maybe they win the battle, but maybe they end up losing the war, and by that I mean the issue of trust.
To Lisa's point, I think if it weren't this issue, it might be something else. This particular group of opponents in Prairie Village has been activated now over the last couple of years. They don't trust, as Charlie said, they don't trust the elected city council or the mayor, and they're going to probably try to stand in the way of whatever the agenda is of the council going forward until there's some sense of either restored trust or maybe turnover in who's holding those offices.
Kansas City marks Juneteenth this week while we observe the end of slavery in America. What happened to the city's bold
and ambitious plans to give reparations to black residents. 2 years ago, the council approved a new reparations commission to work out those payments. We even did a major town hall here about what was being planned. Then crickets. Did we forget about it, Lisa?
Well, certainly the committee got off to a very slow start, and they say that's because they were asked to do this work and did not get any funding to do it. And so members of the Reparations Committee did appear on KCUR this week to talk more about it. They said they do have some money now that was allocated by the City Council to begin doing research into exactly what to do. So right now, it's just in that initial stage, conversations with other cities about what they have done and real research into what can be done in Kansas City. But at this moment, you know, 2 years ago when this committee was formed, we were at a moment where reparations was a more popular, a more palatable idea. And yeah. Now we're in a moment where the federal government is cracking down and saying you cannot use federal dollars for this kind of work, and where diversity and equity and inclusion and making, correcting these wrongs of the past is not popular. And in fact, we're contradicting yeah. the wrongs ever occurred to begin with.
It was just a few weeks ago on this program, Brian, we were talking about an effort in Kansas City to change the name of Troost Avenue to Truth Avenue. And behind the scenes, it was Mayor Quinton Lucas who blocked that, not wanting to move forward with that issue. Has it become so politically unpalatable as an issue that they don't want conversation or seeing this move forward?
You know, I don't know that the Reparations Commission in Kansas City would say that they are they have slowed down their work or changed their work because of that kind of pressure that's happening from the national political culture. Having said that, I think it's unavoidable to observe that any movement in this direction, any effort to promote justice and equity efforts, is going to face stronger headwinds today than it would have 6 months ago.
Stronger headwinds, including potentially that President Trump's administration may say we're going to withhold federal funding to Kansas City if you move too far on this issue with DEI. Is that a concern?
I think that is a concern, yeah. We've already seen the federal government make some changes on transportation projects and other ways that Kansas City gets some money, so probably toeing the line a little bit here and walking carefully.
This was going to be a heavy lift even 2 years ago, and now that the politics of everything has changed so much, this is really an uphill battle.
I have to say, as somebody who follows these things, and we did that reparations town hall, even those other cities who were talking a good game of it, including in California, sure, are sort of slow walking this as well, so it's not unusual here.
Right. It's a nuanced conversation about reparations. It's not a simple issue. It's not just a matter of we're going to make these cash payments and that's the issue. And so we're not in a good time for having nuanced conversations about anything.
Now, when you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
This was a shocking sight, a close shave in Johnson County as a plane crashes on top of a building at the Johnson County Airport. Paradise can now be found in KCK. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. The new Margaritaville Hotel and Resort finally opens to guests at the site of the former Schlitterbahn Water Park. Help wanted, a new Chiefs mascot, Casey Wolf, also known as Dan Mears, retiring after 35 years in the furry suit. And sometimes it's the little things that get people excited. A third Trader Joe's coming to Kansas City, this one close to the IKEA store near I-35 in Merriam. No announcement yet on the opening date.
All right, Lisa Rodriguez, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
Oh, man, I was torn because it is so hot out today. But I actually went with, on Monday, KCUR hosted a town hall listening session with Republican Congressman Mark Alford. One of the few town halls with a Republican congressman that we've seen in recent months, and took a lot of effort to put together on our end. There had moments of contention, moments of protest outside, but ultimately the congressman did answer questions, did have an engaging interaction with the audience, and ironic as well that it was a partnership with a public radio station and a congressman who just the week before
Absolutely.
Had voted to defund.
Yeah, and so he deserves a lot of credit, because a lot of our representatives these days are sort of running for the hills. They're not doing these things. The fact that he stood there and took those questions deserves some tip of the hat this week. Charlie, what did you put down?
I went with Margaritaville.
Yes, you were a pirate head, I'm assuming, then. Okay.
Maybe a little bit.
Okay.
But I think it's a bigger story about development in Western Minot County, which has been hinted as maybe an option for the Chiefs or Royals or a team, and we heard Mayor Tyrone Gardner there and the unified government say that Wyandotte County is open for business, and this is a good proof that we can get things done using star bonds.
Yeah, and what I liked about it also, again, this was on the site of the ill-fated Schlitterbahn Water Park, but they had that huge tragedy there and something positive coming out of that development. Chris.
Dan Mayer's Casey Wolf for me. Casey Wolf has become really an iconic image and symbol of the Kansas City Chiefs, and Dan Mayer's really brought that character to life and he's done such a wonderful job. He just lost his wife also recently, and so congratulations to Dan on a wonderful career, and certainly your thoughts and prayers are with him and his family.
As you and I are longtime hosts, it's nice to see somebody doing their job for 35 years. I was kind of amazed at that and how athletic he is. Brian.
You know, Lisa and I should really compare notes because I also was going to talk about Mark Alford hosting a town hall with KCR.
You can mention Trader Joe's instead.
Well, I'm going to mention one other thing, which is for the Kansas City Royals, who had a terrible week last week, but have come back with a sweep of the Texas Rangers. But most importantly, their star young rookie player, Jack Caglione, hitting his first home run and his second home run in the same game. He has the potential to be a really big star for a long time for this team, so this week could turn out to be very important.
All righty, and on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez and Channel 9's Chris Ketz, from KSHB Channel 41 News' Charlie Keegan and Brian Ellison of KCUR. Before we leave you, we want to let you know that Kansas City PBS is bringing star power to its next big project. Bradley Cooper is known for his movies. Less well-known is his lead role as a full-time caregiver for his father. He's now produced a documentary for PBS on caregiving. And next Thursday night at 7, you can see what he's been working on. And we'll talk with local caregivers and policymakers about what is arguably the most demanding unpaid job in America. We're calling it the Invisible Army. Caregivers in KC. It's Thursday at 7 here on Kansas City PBS. As I like to remind people, Bradley Cooper is not going to be there, but I will. I'll be back also at the same time next week for Week in Review. Until then, from all of us here at the station, be well, keep calm, and carry on.